97.5, The Fanatic.
Pleasant Saturday afternoon to you and yours. Hope you're staying safe and happy and healthy, and a happy Memorial Day weekend to you as well. Welcome into 97.5 The Fanatic. Of course, the number to join the conversation is 610-632-0975. Tyler Zuli broadcasting live from the Parks Race and Sportsbook here inside Chickie and Pete's in Malvern. Come on down and say hello. It is a gorgeous day outside. And we've got everything you could possibly want. You get your bets in, you get a bite to eat, you get a drink, you watch all the games. I see NCAA softball championships starting. You've got all the races this weekend. Of course, baseball, pro hockey, NBA, playoffs, I guess. They're still going on. And so much more. Come on down and say hello. And we are here until 3 o'clock today. I'm Tyler Zuli back at our Bala Cynwyd Studios. That would be Tom Alvord producing today's show. And before we get going, first and foremost, want to send out a big thank you and a job well done to both Tom and Connor Thomas for holding things down last weekend while I took a weekend off. So, Tom, first and foremost, thank you.
It was our pleasure, man. Anytime.
You guys did a tremendous job. I listened on the app while I was down the shore getting ready for the wedding, so I want to commend you guys on a tremendous show. So we will do that right away, and that will be the last comment, or the last praise that I give you for 3 hours.
That's all I can ask for is just one.
We're off to a rousing start. Again, the number to join the conversation, 610-632-0975. We have a ton to get into and a three-hour run with you this afternoon, so why don't we jump right into things? I understand the propensity to be angry with losses. I understand the propensity to even over-exaggerate with losses. I do it. Tom does it. You do it. We all do it as sports fans. And so I understand when losses start to mount that frustrations also and equally mount. However, I think the one thing that we need to keep into consideration this weekend and as you head into the month of June, that baseball losses are unique to other sporting events losses. And they're unique not in the fact that a loss means less or that you can brush off a loss just as is, especially if there are poor decisions made managerial-wise or head coaching-wise, poor decisions in the field, such as what you've seen over the last week from Roman Quinn and Nick Castellanos, from Odubel Herrera, and so on and so forth. I understand that your mounting frustrations are real and they're present, but I do want you to take a step back, and I want you to understand that over the course of 162 games, one game is less than 1% of the season. Does that absolve a team or a manager or a player or a group of players from the wrongdoings that are caused on an individual game basis? No, it does not. However, Tom and I were recounting before the show started today about all of the times in which we have seen and heard and viewed on Twitter and spoken to you on the phone lines what we would deem perhaps a bit of overreaction. And I don't mean that in the sense that Joe Girardi doesn't deserve criticism, or Odubel Herrera doesn't deserve criticism, or any one player or one coach or a team in particular doesn't deserve criticism. Because when criticism is deserved, I believe we are rightfully so able to put that into the atmosphere. However, I do believe that the sky is falling doom and gloom sense from a lot of Phillies fans that we have seen over the course of the last, let's say, 3 weeks specifically, because I think that they have mounted due to the fact that you had an opportunity to sweep the LA Dodgers and you did not. You had an opportunity to win a series in Atlanta and you didn't. You had an opportunity to beat the New York Mets up 8-1 and you did not. All of those things you have a right to be frustrated about. But the overarching sense of doom and gloom that the season is toast, that this team stinks, that they're going to miss the playoffs on May 28th, I believe is a little bit premature and unwarranted. And so with that, I wanted to look at some of the more positive things. And this is rare for me because I believe that I like to do objective sports conversations. But I want to be a little bit more optimistic. The Phillies are less than five games out of a playoff spot. They have almost three quarters of a season left to play. They have almost 120 games left in the course of the regular season. It is not yet June. And while I do believe that the New York Mets, who, by the way, have a ridiculous gauntlet to get through in the month of June, look at their schedule for 1 second. They have to play the Dodgers, the Giants, the Brewers, the Angels. It's a lot of the same teams that the Phillies have had to play over the last month themselves. While I do believe that the Mets are on a collision course with an NL East victory, and maybe that's a little bit hypocritical of me because of the fact that I just said we are almost three quarters of the season left to play across Major League Baseball, while I do believe that they are on a collision course with winning the division, they are that good, I believe. The Phillies are only four games out of a playoff spot, or less than five games out of a playoff spot, with 5 months left to play. And so, while I understand your frustrations, I do not believe this season to be doom or gloom or over by any stretch of the imagination as we approach Memorial Day and approach June 1st. And with that being said, I wanted to take a look at some of the positives of the season so far and give you an understanding as to why the Phillies are very much still alive and very much still into the thick of a playoff race because, my friends, it's not even June yet. So let's take a look at some of the things that have been positive for this team. And that's where we're going to begin today's show. And of course, the number to join the conversation is 610-632-0975. What are your silver linings of what has been an admittedly frustrating start to the season? What are some of the silver linings of a season that has almost 70%, over 70% of the year left to play? And what are some of the things that you believe are going to keep this team afloat as they head into the summer months of June, July, and August? And I'm going to start with one that I have been, a player specifically, that I have been adamantly against over the course of the last three seasons. And Tom, I think you probably know where I'm going, because you and I have had some heated conversations about this one player in particular. I told you, if they would have made the playoffs last year, he would not have been in the starting rotation, because I didn't trust him into a playoff game. So far this season, and over the course of the last seven games specifically, the last seven starts, Aaron Nola has been sensational. Over the course of his last seven starts, he's thrown 46 innings. That's an average of about six and two-thirds innings per start. With today's standard of pitching, today's standard of micromanaging starters and bullpen arms, to get into the seventh on average is pretty darn good. In those 46 innings, he has struck out 58 hitters. He has a sub-1 whip, and it's not sub-1 by just a percentage point or two. He has a .87 whip over the last seven starts, and a sub-3 ERA at 2.93. Over the course of the season, opposing offenses' batting average is down from 237 to 212 against Aaron Nola, and his whip is down from 1.13 to sub-1 at .94. So where we begin today's show, I understand that you're frustrated at Joe Girardi. I understand you're frustrated at the center field position. I understand that you are frustrated at times with the lack of offense that this team has mustered, whether it be Nick Castellanos or Kyle Schwarber or the center field position in general. I want to know what some of your silver linings are that are keeping this team afloat, even despite the fact that they are under 500 at the turn of May into June. And for me, I start with one player in particular that I have been hypercritical of, and that, of course, is Aaron Nola. So 610-632-0975 is the number to join the conversation here as we get started, broadcasting live from the Parks Race and Sportsbook inside Chickie and Pete's in Malvern. Come on down and say hello. I would love to see you. Love to say hello. Love to shake your hand if you're willing. Obviously, COVID-related. I understand if you are not. And I would love to see you. Come on down and say hello with us during this Memorial Day weekend. Again, the number to join the show is 610-632-0975. We're going to get into Bryce Harper, Alec Bohm, the bullpen, the starting pitching, and so much more as we begin today's show. And that's where we'll welcome our second member of today's program. That man you heard just for a second at the beginning of the show. Of course, that would be my partner, Tom Alvord. Tom, first and foremost, happy Saturday to you. I hope your weekend is off to a good start.
Thank you, Tyler. You as well. Appreciate that.
And I know that we have done a lot of negativity about the Phillies. You and I specifically, over the course of the last year and a half working together. But I want to take a look at some of the silver linings of today's, of this season so far, even though I know that they are sub-500. I gave you Aaron Nola to start today's show, and you know how critical of him I have been. What are your silver linings as we march towards the beginning of June with this Phillies team?
Yes, so I have some thoughts about last night's game. You want me to hold off on those for a little bit longer?
No, please, go ahead.
Okay, so I appreciate that. So, listen, I am frustrated about what the Phillies are currently doing. They spent way too much money. They have way too big of names in here to be a team that is a couple games under 500. What are they now? Four games under 500, I believe.
Yes.
This has been a disappointing season so far. That is correct. I get angry after losses, too. I get frustrated after losses, too. But, Ty, the overreaction...
And rightfully so.
Yeah.
I think you're allowed to be frustrated, especially when things happen the way that they do. Let's say an 8-1 blown loss... Or a blown
7-1.
Lead, 7-1, excuse me. 7-1 blown lead to the New York Mets. You lose that game 8-7.
Sure.
The play in center field by Odubel Herrera the other night, which inevitably cost them a game. The play, the ball that dropped in between Nick Castellanos and Roman Quinn a few nights prior, which inevitably cost them a game. You have a right to be upset.
Yes.
But, as you were saying...
Yes. However, can we relax, please, on the overreaction to every Phillies loss that happens? It is a 162-game season. We cannot have this outrage blow up after every single loss. Now, listen... They lost yesterday. That's a game you really want to win. Going in three games with the first-place Mets, you really want to win that series. You win the first game. That's awesome. That sets you up perfectly for the weekend. However, in a game where you pitch Bailey freaking Falter, who probably should not be in the rotation, probably maybe shouldn't be in a major league staff, whether it's the bullpen.
I disagree with you, but we'll talk about that
later. Sure, but regardless, like a pitcher who was your long man all of last year and who was just recently, I guess...
Recalled.
Yes, correct. Yeah. And they're trying to, you know, turn him into a starter because they know with the accelerated spring training that things might happen. There's not as many days off, so it's nice to have him as a sixth starter just in case you need it. You put up Bailey Falter against Carlos Carrasco. Now, Carlos Carrasco is a bit older of a pitcher, but he is still a damn good pitcher, and he was good through five innings yesterday. That is a scheduled loss. If they had lost last night 8-0, I would be angry. I would be okay with the overreaction. They fought in that game, and in a 162-game season against a really good opponent, I am not going to have this fake outrage after every... I'm not going to do it. Certain losses, I was so angry... In the two losses against the Atlanta Braves, Joe Girardi has his hands all over both of them. I hated what I saw from Odubel in center field, letting that ball go under him. All the momentum was lost after that. I hated Girardi not going to Corey Knebel because he has some weird rule about not going three straight days. I'm going to be angry about those games. You're allowed to be angry about those games as well. But, I mean, come on. They fought last night. It was one game against the first-place Mets, the hottest team in baseball. I hate going on Twitter after every game and just seeing season's over, fire everybody, what's the point, not watching the Phillies anymore. It was one loss, a game that you probably should have lost, a scheduled loss, as I said, because you're throwing out Bailey Falter out there and expecting to win when this dude probably, what was his pitch count probably, 50 to 60 pitches?
Yeah, I can't imagine. He was on a tight pitch count.
Yes.
And here's the thing with Bailey Falter, and we're going to talk more about him because you and I
don't mean to bash on Bailey Falter.
No,
I'm just saying
it's understandable. I get what you're, you know, I get your pace of kind of scheduled loss. I don't buy that in baseball as much as I do other places, simply because baseball has so much fluidity
to it,
where anything can happen over the course of a 9-inning game.
I'll say it was a game that you were more likely going to lose than you were more likely.
You were
going
the underdog for a reason.
Yes,
not
correct.
Just because of the fact that the Mets are a better team than you as of right now. Here's the thing with Bailey Falter, and then we're going to get back to, I'm going to get your silver lining, if you will, in just a second. Bailey Falter, if you look at the trajectory that he is on, is it not eerily similar to the trajectory that the Phillies put Ranger Suarez on last year?
It is, correct.
Sans him being the closer for, you know, a 5-week stretch. What they're doing with Bailey Falter right now is preempting what they had to do with Ranger Suarez a season ago. Bailey Falter is being made into a starter, and he's going to be allowed to come along slowly as a starter because they understood last year they had to force Ranger Suarez into the starting rotation despite the fact that he was a closer a week prior. They want to avoid that situation for a second consecutive year because, like you said, it's a 162-game season. Injuries happen. Dead arm periods happen. Would it shock anybody if any one of the five starting pitchers went on the IL for a period of time? No.
No,
those
kind
of things happen over 162 games. You get a tweak. You get a muscle pull. Anything could happen. And you want to be prepared as opposed to either A, having to go to a AAA arm that may not be ready, or B, running out a bullpen game where you have to start Nick Nelson or start Bailey Falter and only have three innings of availability. Instead, you're stretching him out now, and you have the ability to, if something were to happen, he could give you maybe five. I'm not asking for seven or eight, but if you can get five, that front loads your bullpen into the sixth, seventh, eighth, and ninth a lot better. The construct of your bullpen is a lot stronger than if Bailey Falter goes 2 2/3, and now you've got to get another three from Nick Nelson just to get to that launching point.
Yes, and I will say that. I agree with what they're doing with Bailey Falter. I agree with the idea. I personally just don't think he's all that great of a pitcher. You said it's similar to what they're doing with Ranger Suarez. That is true. I think Ranger Suarez is a better pitcher than Bailey Falter.
I don't disagree with that. And he's having
a down season, Ranger Suarez. I agree with what they're doing. And Mike Vito, who produced for Hunter last show, was like, oh man, like why didn't they go with Eflin last night? He's on normal rest. I'm like, dude, they're in 16 games in 16 days. Like, it was a weird off season with the lockout. I'm fine with them going with the sixth starter. Had no problem with it. But in his first start as a starter, when he's ramping up to become a starter for the entirety of the season, I can't expect more from him than like four innings. So I say scheduled loss, and I know you don't love that term in baseball, but it is a game where your starter is going out there at max giving you four innings. You're going against Carlos Carrasco, who on the downslope of his career, you know, downslope of his prime, still can give you good innings. I wouldn't be shocked if he went out there and gave you seven good innings, Carlos Carrasco. Now, you know, he had five really good innings, and then the Phillies ended up getting to him. To me, it was the basis of this point was just, I hate the overreaction to every single loss. We are the best fan base.
Game season.
Best fan base in the city. I understand it. We want our teams to win, but this is not the Eagles where every game matters. Like, 162 games. These losses are going to happen. Now, I need to see a rebound tonight, and I like the way they rebounded yesterday. And who knows? I might come in tomorrow, and I might be furious about how they lose tonight, potentially, if they lose tonight. But I'm just saying, not every loss needs to be treated the same with the same overreaction. Now, I want to ask you a question
real quick.
Yes, go ahead.
Have you ever seen a baseball team go 162-0?
Besides the teams I play with on Xbox,
your MLB The Show teams?
Yes, three straight years, 162-0.
Yeah, that's probably because you made Tom Alvord 100 overall.
It was the first Shohei Ohtani, yes.
Yeah, there you go. You've not seen a team go 162-0?
No, what's the record? 114 by the Mariners?
Have you seen a team go 130-32?
No.
No, you have not. That's right. I think it's 116.
16, it might be, yeah.
Is the record. That means the best team ever, statistically speaking, not the best team, you know, the best constructed team.
Regular season, yes.
The best regular season record team lost 46 games. The best team ever lost 46
games. Now, we're not comparing them to the best team ever, but you're just saying, yes.
The point is, you can't overreact to one particular loss. Can you be frustrated? Absolutely. But you cannot overreact to this one particular loss or that one particular loss over the course of a 162-game schedule. I believe this team is going to rebound at some point and rail off like 8 out of 10. And then all of a sudden you're three games over 500 and you're having a totally different conversation.
Yep.
610-632-0975. I want to get your silver lining in just a moment.
Yeah, sorry. Just had to get that off my chest.
I understand. You have every right to... that's why we started today's show with that. You kind of pushed that topic while we were discussing pre-show. You're like, listen, I got to get this off my chest. I am frustrated at the frustrations because they're misguided. You have frustrations? Fine. You have doom and gloom? Not ready to go there yet. I want to get yours in just a second, but first, let's go to Center City, and we'll talk to Chad on the Fanatic. What's up, Chad?
0975.
Chad. All right, we're going to put Chad on hold, Tom, if you don't mind trying to connect with him real quick, see if he can turn that radio off in the background for us, if you don't mind. 610-632-0975. All right, the other thing that we're going to get into today, and we will start this on the other side. Last night, Jimmy Butler was insane. Like,
yeah, heroics, he had a pretty good game.
Heroics beyond heroics. And I watched Jimmy Butler put up 40-some-odd points in a potential closeout game on the road in Boston against probably one of the top three best defensive teams in the NBA this season in the Boston Celtics. And I watch all of this happen, and I can't help but wonder what could have been. And I don't necessarily mean Jimmy Butler specifically. Now, that's the easiest route to take, is the Jimmy Butler conversation, but I don't necessarily mean Jimmy Butler specifically. And it gets me thinking. Joel Embiid needs a number two. Desperately needs a number two. And the Sixers tried to make a move and tried to make a trade for said number two in James Harden. Whether that ends up being the case or not remains to be seen. Because like we talked about the other day, I do believe that James Harden is going to be a Sixer come 2022-2023. Whether he opts into the player contract, the player option, or signs some sort of an extension that may end up being more team-friendly than the player option is going to be for 1 year. But the question is, Jimmy Butler is a number one on the Miami Heat. There's no doubt about it. He's their best player. He's their driving force. He's their engine. He's all of those cliches that you can think of. But if Jimmy Butler were on the Sixers, he would be the number two. So I want to ask you, who is the number two for the 76ers next season? And I mean that in a more overarching sense. Give me a name and how this player helps the Sixers get to the next level, get over the Eastern Conference semifinals hump, and get to the Eastern Conference finals. Who is going to be the 2022-2023 number two for the Philadelphia 76ers? Player could be a trade that they make that involves Tobias Harris and some other pieces. He could be on the roster already. I'll explain a little bit more on the other side. 610-632-0975. That's the number to join the conversation. So, we start today's show. I know it's Memorial Day or Memorial Day weekend. I know you're hanging out. You're probably down the shore or you're out in the backyard barbecuing or whatever the case may be. Our topics today to begin the show. Give me a silver lining for this Philly season to begin the year. Because like Tom said, the overreaction has been, I think, real and it's been rampant. And it needs to be cooled down a little bit. Take the button off the hot seat. Take the team off the hot seat, if you will. If you want to put the manager there, that's fine. If you want to put a particular player there, also fine. But take the team as a whole off the hot seat. And instead, give me your silver lining to this Philly season as the season rolls into June. And also, who is going to be the 76ers' number two next year? And I'll explain why I have this thought process a little bit in further detail. And I want to compare it to a team in the NHL playoffs that are still currently playing that won their series last night. 610-632-0975 is the number to join the conversation. Back at our Bala Cynwyd Studios, that's Tom Alvord. I'm Tyler Zulli as we broadcast live from the Parks Race and Sportsbook here inside Chickie and Pete's in Malvern on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
.31 here on 97.5 The Fanatic. Welcome back to the show. Tom Alvord, Tyler Zulli, is myself. Tom Alvord's back at our Bala Cynwyd Studios. And, of course, you at 610-632-0975. Tom, we're going to get to this Sixers conversation in just a second, but I think this parlays into it very nicely. We have no room to talk as Sixers fans to make fun of anybody, especially any fans of the four teams that made it to the Eastern Conference and Western Conference Finals. We have no room to talk. Our team forgot to show up for the final 96 minutes of basketball. However, I do take a slight little bit of solace in the fact that after last night's performance at home, with an opportunity to close things out and go to the NBA Finals for the first time with this group, you know, meaning Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and all those guys, Celtics fans were walking on the subway tracks. So I don't take solace in this. This is unfortunate. The subway broke down, so they had to get out of the subway and walk on the tracks of the subway. And in the video, you can hear just the faintest, saddest, most gutless "Let's go Celtics" chant going on in the subway.
Very forced, you're saying?
Yes.
Yeah.
Incredibly forced. Now, granted, like I said, we don't have any room to talk.
No, we don't.
Because quite frankly, if SEPTA, the Broad Street line, were to break down and people were forced to walk off of it, and a "Let's go Sixers" chant would break out after game, let's say, I don't know, game 6 of the Eastern Conference semifinals, I'd be pretty embarrassed that the "Let's go Sixers" chant broke out.
Yes.
However, I can take the slightest bit of fun and enjoyment out of Celtics fans' misery. Had to get out of the subway. I feel bad for them. I don't want anybody to have to be in a perilous situation. But I do find it kind of funny that the faint, kind of embarrassing "Let's go Sixers" chant, or "Let's go Celtics" chant, was echoing through the subway tunnels.
They still have ruined me, the Sixers. So I gave out a smirk, but then it went right back to a frown afterwards because the Sixers have broke me.
Do you know what the thing is with the Sixers? And we're going to get to this number 2 question in just a second because it has to do with Jimmy Butler a little bit. Do you know what the thing with the Sixers is this season that I am unable to get over?
Correct.
Yeah, this past season that I'm unable to get over is the fact that, barring a trade of Tobias Harris or not re-signing James Harden at all, we talked about this a couple weeks ago. I don't feel confident in the fact that anything in particular gets done. Now, I do believe that Daryl Morey is, to use the Brett Brown phrase, star hunting for a third star. And I do believe that they're going to do that at the behest of the limited depth that they have on this bench and of this team. But I don't feel confident the way that I have in years past. I rebounded from the Raptors loss specifically, thinking about, all right, next year's the year. And then Ben Simmons gets hurt, and things kind of go sour, and they get swept out by the Celtics, and I go, you know what? It was an anomaly, this sweep. Next year's the year. And then Doc Rivers comes in, and they're the one seed, and things happen the way that they do. And then I don't feel so confident heading into this season. And now I really don't feel so confident heading into next season. So if the thing that's been crushed, if anything's been crushed by the Sixers over the course of the last 24 months, it's my confidence, because I have none at this point.
Yeah, and honestly, like when you think about it, realistically, and you know, I don't like to give you props, but you're a relatively smart guy there, Tyler.
Don't give me any kind of props.
Okay, I won't. Never mind. Forget what I said.
Pretend you never said that.
Okay. You want me to dump it or no?
No. Okay. I want the world to hear
okay,
it. You can
fair.
Just pretend you never said it.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at this team realistically, like, you saw everything. You saw, even though, you know, Joel Embiid went out there and he fought. He was a warrior. He should not have been on the court the last 4 games. He went out there and he gave it his all. I understand that. And I also saw him in the post-game press conference where he just looked like he had nothing left. And he didn't have an answer. And there was, you know, concerns about the leadership in those last couple games. You look at the lack of flexibility when it comes to this Philadelphia 76ers roster. We have, you know, like you said, unless Tobias Harris gets traded, we're running back pretty much the same team. I think they're going to add on to the bench a little bit, I think Daryl Morey is going to try his work his wonders that way. But, you know, James Harden's 99% most likely going to be back next year.
I believe he is. Yes.
I think it's just it's realistic at this point. Everyone is under contract from last season except DeAndre Jordan, Paul Millsap, and Danny Green. Come July 1st, I think it is, with the guaranteed. He's injured, so he's not coming back. Anyway,
correct.
We already heard Daryl Morey say that Doc Rivers is going to be the coach next season. Now, I still have my questions about that, but Daryl Morey went out there and said it. The Lakers just hired a new head coach yesterday. That was something that Doc Rivers was linked to, going to the Lakers to be head coach. So
yes,
that,
they hired Darvin Ham instead, by the way.
Yes, correct. So that kind of takes that out of the running. Doc Rivers going to L.A. So you're looking at this team and you're like...
Oh, you mean you can't have two head coaches at the same time?
Not... Last I checked, I don't believe so. You can have an assistant head coach. Is that what they call it? Assistant head coach?
Co-head coach.
Co-head coach, we can go. Yeah,
no,
it's tough doing the same job.
It's not going to happen.
Yes. So when you look at this team realistically, unless Daryl Morey works his magic and can pull off a trade that's like Al Horford for Danny Green or Seth Curry giving away Josh Richardson, then you're looking at this team, you're like, we're pretty much going to have the same team run back last year, and they weren't good enough this year. What makes me think that they're going to be good enough next year?
So, and that's why I'm going to ask you this question. And you may have just answered that question, and I think you and I may have similar answers to this question. But last night we watched Jimmy Butler just go, the phrase you used or the term you used was go nuclear. He was unstoppable last night. Busted ankle, messed up knee, and he just attacked and attacked and attacked and attacked. And the thing with Jimmy Butler is, we've seen it up close and personal, but we know it over the course of his NBA career. I want to ask you this question before we get there, and it's a simple question, Tom. What is Jimmy Butler elite at in the NBA game?
Elite?
Elite.
I would say creating his own shot.
I would say that Jimmy Butler is elite at nothing in the
NBA.
Okay,
that's fair.
However, Jimmy Butler has become a superstar, I think, at this point, or at least a top-flight star because of his ability to create his own shot, his drive, his ability to get to the basket, his ability to finish around the rim, his ability to create on that little jump-stop pass that we loved, that we hated Ben Simmons for, but he does it seemingly better for whatever reason. His floor vision, his leadership, I think I mentioned that already. But everything that he does is... I don't believe at an elite level. I believe it's at a good and great level about everything that he does, but he just finds ways to compete and score and win basketball games with all of that, you know, being said. So I watched him play last night, and of course, he was the team leader, but from in terms of a productivity standpoint, the number two to Joel Embiid when he was here. He could have been the number one at times, but he was the number two to Joel Embiid when he was here. Joel Embiid desperately needs a legitimate number two to help compete, for help the Sixers compete next season. With that being said, the number two for the Sixers next season, because of everything that we just talked about, is more than likely going to be one of two players. And it's both internal. It's James Harden or it's Tyrese Maxey. And so with that, we talked about expectations the other night for James Harden. We have talked about Tyrese Maxey at length. We've done a show that praised him for everything that he has done this season. If James Harden or Tyrese Maxey are the Sixers' number two, meaning the other one is probably the Sixers' number three, and you just talked about running it back, basically, Tom, this team does not have enough to get over the top. And that right there is why my confidence is shattered. So I ask you, who is the Sixers' number two going to be next year? I believe the answer to be James Harden. And whether there is an offseason of health and recovery or not, there's an offseason put in the gym working or not, we know Tyrese Maxey's going to work, but I believe the answer to be James Harden. And can James Harden be consistent enough over the course of, let's say he plays 72 games over the course of an 82-game season, and into the playoffs, because this team is going to make the playoffs again next year. They're not bad enough to miss the playoffs entirely. But this team is going to make the playoffs, and then what? And if James Harden's your number two, then what? And that's where our other question today comes in. who's the number two for this Sixers team in 22 and 23? My answer is James Harden, for better or for worse. Tom, who do you go with?
I would love to say James Harden because that makes the most sense. That is the guy that you traded Ben Simmons for, the big deadline acquisition, one of the biggest at the time Sixers trades of all time. It's supposed to be James Harden. From what I saw this past, you know, 20 games of the regular season into the playoffs, I can't trust James Harden to be that guy. Now, he can blame it on, you know, him not being completely healthy, the hamstring nagging him, him not having two consecutive off seasons where he wasn't able to get right. He can blame it on all those things. Ty, unfortunately, I just think Father Time has caught up to him a bit, and I don't think he's going to make the necessary adjustments that he needs to make to continue to be a star, quote-unquote, player in this league.
Okay.
I think there's a possibility for him to, like, there's things he can work on, and Devon talks about it all the time. Me and you talk about it with Devon all the time. I would love, he cannot get to the basket the same way he used to. He cannot blow by guys the same way he used to. He tries to drive to the lane. He runs into three trees down low, throws it away, and then looks at the ref for a call. What he can do is have a little pullback mid-range game added to his game. Maybe a floater thrown in here and there. Like, there's things he can do. You can age more gracefully. Unfortunately, I just think James Harden is a bit too hard-headed. And I don't want to, like, bash on him completely. I just think he, and I'm not James Harden, obviously. He has the mindset of, I've gotten this far with the game that I play. Why would I change now? You know what I mean? I'm going to figure it out instead of this offseason working on other aspects of his game so he can age more gracefully. So I think my answer has to be, and it's a lot of pressure to put on a 21-year-old kid who's going to be 22 years old next year at some point in the season. I think your answer is Tyrese Maxey, unfortunately, Tyler. And I don't know if that's enough to ask for, or that might be too much to ask for from a 22-year-old kid.
Tom, you and I did a show. I remember it like it was yesterday because we had to back end it or like recant it midway through the season. And you and I did that show as well about expectations and pressure on Tyrese Maxey going into year two. He exceeded the expectations and committed to the pressure and was and he thrived in it for a large majority of the season. Are we going to have a similar conversation in 3 months' time when the season is, you know, around the corner to ask about his pressures once again? Because the expectations for him are going to raise again. He accepted the role, he embraced the pressure, and he thrived. And that's great. And now, we as a fan base, from his 20 to 21-year-old season, saw the growth. Are we going to ask for another, I don't want to call it meteoric rise, because if he does another meteoric rise, he's probably in stardom land. But can we ask Tyrese Maxey at 22 years old to be an all-star next year? Can we ask Tyrese Maxey at 22 years old to average 20 points and 6 assists per game? Because I think that those are the expectations that we as a fan base are going to place on him heading into year three. Are they fair?
I mean, probably not. Like, we're going from last September where we're asking, where we're worried about the role that he's going to have on this team without Ben Simmons.
Because, and just strictly as a starter.
Sure.
That's what we talked about, you know, a year and, or 8 months ago. You know, is he going to be a thrivable starter?
Yeah, because he went from playing in his rookie year 15 minutes a game to having to play 30-plus this past season. He was able to make that step. He was able to take on that challenge. Now you fast forward from last September to, you know, this September coming up in 4 months or so, we're going to have this conversation. That's a year span where we're wondering if Tyrese Maxey can take the jump from sixth man to starter to now this guy has to be the second star of your team or this team's not going anywhere.
Correct.
As a ton, and if there's a kid that can handle it, it is Tyrese Maxey, because that kid is special. Not only physically, but mentally. He is so gifted. So if there's anyone that can do it, it is Tyrese Maxey. That is just a ton to ask for a kid who is in the second year who played 1 year of college. Third year, it will be, playing 1 year of college.
Yeah, and a shortened season, by the way, because of COVID.
With no tournament.
You didn't get a tournament. And, you know, maybe that's a blessing for the Sixers. We've talked about that plenty of times, where he probably would have been gone by 21 should there have been a tournament. I think there's a couple of guys that fall under that category, strictly from that Kentucky team that year, but in totality, I think you would have seen guys move up and down the board if there would have been a tournament. So that raises the question. I want to ask you at 610-632-0975. Who is the number two next year? Tom thinks it's Tyrese Maxey. I believe it to be James Harden. And either way, I didn't ask you this, Tom. Do you believe if Tyrese Maxey is your number two, and even if he raises to those expectations that maybe fairly or unfairly we're going to place upon his shoulders, is that enough to get them over the hump, to get to, let's say, the Eastern Conference Finals?
I fight back and forth with myself on this question, just like my thoughts on the Sixers in general, because I think it's possible. If Maxey makes a significant jump, if James Harden is a bit more comfortable in his role, because let's face it, like in his role as a point guard, he was very, very good for a majority of last season. It was just he can't score nearly as much as he used to. He can't get to the basket nearly as much as he used to. However, if Embiid can stay healthy, if Tyrese Maxey can make a nice jump, if James Harden can be more comfortable in his role and adapt to his game a little bit more, and Daryl Morey can work a little bit of magic, whether it be offloading Tobias Harris's contract, getting some more bench pieces on this team, I think it is possible. However, I just threw a lot of ifs in that sentence there, Tyler, and
that's
the issue.
A lot of hypotheticals.
Yes, correct.
And you know we try not to play in those hypotheticals.
Sure, absolutely.
But I think at this point it's the only progression that we can go through where we keep our sanity. If that makes any sense.
Yeah,
because
otherwise
we're thinking about, like we were talking about with the Phillies, the actual doom and gloom before a season even begins with the Sixers. Before a playoffs, before the NBA playoffs have even concluded, we've already put our mindset in that thought process. It's a bad place to be.
I don't like it here.
610-632-0975. All right, before we hit the break, Tom, we're going to go back to what we talked about at the beginning of the show. Silver linings for a Phillies season that you have ruled is being unfairly criticized. And I think you're right. I think you are correct in 162 games that it is, I think it's like unfathomable almost. You're not in Washington territory, Cincinnati territory,
Oakland, yep.
Right, where like all hope is lost, and Pittsburgh and your team's not willing to spend any money. You're in a bit of a rut, and I expect it to be corrected or correct itself at some point across the season. There are a couple games under 500 right now. There's almost 120 games left to play. What is your silver lining for this season so far? I gave you Aaron Nola. What is yours?
Yeah, and I love that Aaron Nola answer because, Ty, me and you have had countless conversations,
many conversations
on these airwaves of how we lost our confidence in Aaron Nola last season because he made us lose it. He was horrible last season when it comes to Aaron Nola. However, this season, Ty, I'm starting to get my confidence back in Aaron Nola. Like, he looks confident out there. He looks like vintage Aaron Nola. And the performance he put up against the Braves in that closeout game was incredible. 8 1/3 innings pitch. One run allowed, and he wasn't even pitching when it was allowed. 10 strikeouts, like, that's the Aaron, you know, you can't say that's the Aaron Nola we need going forward. You're not going to get that every single game. That type of Aaron Nola is what we need going forward. So I love that answer, but I'm going to give you another one, Ty. The bullpen has walked way too many people.
Far too many.
Yes, I believe they have the second most walks among relief pitchers. They did the other night, at least, when it comes to Major League Baseball. However, their top guys, and I mentioned it before, have been pretty solid. Corey Knebel, an ERA of 2.89. It really was that one game. He's had a couple blown saves, but it was that one against the Mets where he was not ready to pitch. He was not mentally in that game.
Correct.
He goes in the ninth inning. They're up 6 runs. I forget who the pitcher was. Blew, you know, let him back in it. The Mets, that is. He goes in there. He was not ready. Like, that was a disaster waiting to happen. Other than that, he's been pretty solid. 2.89 ERA, as I mentioned. Brad Hand, who a lot of us had questions about coming into the season, a 1.46 ERA. Sir Anthony Dominguez, a 2.16 ERA. And even Andrew Bilotti, who's been, you know, a little bit of a diamond in the rough for this team as well, a 2.51 ERA. So I hate how Joe Girardi manages the bullpen a lot of nights. But when my top-ish guys in Knebel, Sir Anthony Dominguez, and Brad Hand, who should be the 9.87 inning guys for 90% of the rest of the season, when they have ERAs that low and they've been pitching relatively well, that is my silver lining for this season so far.
Do you know they have a team ERA under 4?
Both bullpen and starting staff?
Yes.
No, I did not know that.
It's 3.99 is a team ERA. Now, take into consideration the fact, now granted, obviously the innings are weighted because of the starters, but take into consideration the fact that Jose Alvarado has like an 8 ERA, a near 8 ERA, who, by the way, your best friend You love him.
Oh, dude.
He was sent down to AAA.
Hallelujah. I sent out a prayer when that happened.
I know you're thrilled.
Oh, my God. It's about time.
He had an above 7 ERA. So does James Norwood, who has pitched way too much for my liking.
And Familia hasn't been great either. He's over 4, I believe.
Well over 4. You take those, just those two guys out, that number dips even further. But the fact that this team has a sub 4 ERA as a team, I can't ask for much more out of a pitching rotation that we weren't sure what we were going to get heading into the season. And in fact, an even bigger silver lining is the fact that I don't believe that Ranger Suarez has been very good this year. I was wrong in that regard. I do believe, however, he's starting to round back out into form a little bit, even if the numbers don't necessarily dictate that. You have guys that are, in the last, let's say, 3 weeks, pitching better than they did at the start of the season, including Zach Wheeler, who, of course, was, you know, I think unfairly given, oh, is Zach Wheeler having a bad year? Because he had no spring training.
Yeah, he looks like old Zach Wheeler now.
This pitching staff as a whole, sans a couple of guys that we mentioned, Norwood and Alvarado specifically, have been really, really good. And I know that offense is down across the league, but the pitching staff's been really good this year. So your silver lining is the bullpen, which I can't disagree
with. The top end bullpen.
The top end of the bullpen. Let me rephrase that so I'm not putting words in your mouth. And you're correct. The walks from Knebel need to come down. The walks from Hand need to come down. Obviously, Alvarado was a big problem. Control is an issue, but I think that it's fixable. And that's why I do believe that this team is going to right itself at some point. And like I said, perhaps win, let's say, 8 out of 10. 610-632-0975. We'll take a look into some of the other numbers from guys that are either outperforming expectations or are continuing expectations, perhaps your former MVP or your current MVP of the National League. We're also going to get into our side topic as well as we roll on into the 1 o'clock hour. 610-632-0975. Tom Alvord, Tyler Zolli. We broadcast live from the Parks Race and Sportsbook here inside Chickie and Pete's in Malvern until 3 o'clock right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.